Hello and welcome. I am Anna Mglelis, and you are listening to 355, a podcast by Chanel. Tonight, in Chanel Suite at the Majestic Hotel, everything is very beautiful, very muffled. The sea looks like a blue screen, but a wild effervescence is building up downstairs. We are at the Cannes Film Festival, the most prestigious film festival. Below, on the croisette, it is the 6 p.m. frenzy with everyone rushing to the soon-to-be-climbed mythical steps. For the fifth chapter of 355, I will meet with personalities from the world of cinema who I admire for their singular work. Together, we'll talk about creativity, boldness, and freedom. In a dialogue homage to Gabrielle Chanel, who was very close to cinema and invented a world of her own, the world of the modern woman. Creating words, that's also what cinema attempts in each film. I spoke with Rebecca Zlotowski, a French screenwriter and director, who in just three films established herself as one of the most brilliant directors of her generation. Her debut movie, Belle Épine, was in Cannes in 2010 as part of Semaine de la Critique. Her films have gathered talented actors and actresses such as Léa Seydoux, Nathalie Portman, Lily Rose Depp and Taha Rahim. Est-ce que ça tourne là?
Are you rolling?
Ça tourne, hein?
Yeah, rolling?
Voilà, je demandais, okay. Parce que c'est magnifique ce que
I'm
tu dis.
I'm asking, because it's beautiful what you just said.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Rebecca. I dropped my e-cigarette when I saw Kristen Stewart, and you lit up a real cigarette.
Yeah, I wanted to go straight to the heart of the matter.
We were talking with Kristen about the modern woman here in the Chanel suite. Chanel worked hard to achieve this. She invented the modern woman by freeing her from the corset and allowing herself her own space in which she could radiate beauty. Although she wasn't a great beauty of her time, and she invented for her own purposes.
I can relate to that. I can really identify with that process.
Yeah, it's a real creative process. Creativity leads to freedom, although it can be extremely painful. Nonetheless, it's a path towards something that lives and breathes. So I wanted to ask you something about Kristen. For me, she is one of the modern women. She is so unique that you dropped your electronic thing. What is your personal take on modernity and the modern woman?
Well, I mean, in the first place, the notion of modernity is that it reinvents itself every time in every field of representation. We don't know what is represents a modern woman in cinema. And if we talk about Kristen, about her predecessors, both male and female, like Coco Chanel on the issue of the reinventing the feminine stereotype, that's where my view of modernity starts. How, when we are responsible for making things move, we reinvent the female body and reinvent the male body as well. Mm-hmm. And my impression is that today, and that's why seeing Kristen Stewart has such an effect on me, is that she's relatively gentle, like Léa Seydoux or maybe Simone Signoret was at a particular time, or like Annie Girardot. They're all actresses who at some point, along with certain actors, they reinvented the female stereotype, and that in some way the struggle to change certain mindsets, change the boundaries on what feminine stands for, are things that actresses and not only the directors have led. And you as well, in some way, Anna. I mean, if I'm to address you as an actress, I feel, and I'm not just saying this because you've recently become our president, but I think it's important, over and above the issue of the presentation, it's not only the issue of freedom, it's where is seduction hiding, where is personality hiding, and all that moves the boundaries and the responsibilities of actresses and actors in their own bodies. I think that our current generation of actresses is amazing as far as that is concerned. They're at the forefront of new models and question gender.
Indeed, you can compare Kristen to Léa Seydoux, who appeared in two of your films and who really turned out to be a fabulous actress in your films. I think I even read that she said so herself.
Yes, we had the chance to work together on two films, one that was practically one of her first major roles, Belle Épine, and the second, very different. She played the part of a worker in the nuclear industry. I was lucky to work with her.
Grant Santrow, yes. I think there is an off-screen connection between Kristen and Léa. Obviously, there is also an on-screen connection. However, there is a link in real life because there are extremely successful actresses who are part and parcel of the Hollywood industry. There's a connection that could be described as modern. It was exhibited by Gabrielle Chanel years ago and relates to a refusal. It relates to a refusal to permanently radiate happiness.
Ah, I see what you mean.
It's about actresses like Léa and Kristen Stewart choosing not to smile and not to be in the business of saying, I'm so happy doing what I do for a living. Instead, they invest themselves in their role as actresses and in their creativity, because it's never easy for an actress to find where her creativity lies. I have a feeling or hunch that this unwillingness to smile, with which I again sympathize,
is, at the end of the day, a fairly masculine quality.
And is perfectly personified by these women who transform the perception of the powerful woman. The fact that they are powerful does not mean that they're going to smile all the time and show that they're happy.
Yes, I mean, I agree with you entirely, and you're putting it brilliantly. I mean, for these women who can have access to economic and artistic power, there's this idea that there's no need to resort to whimpering, and that when we give ourselves role models, these role models can also be male. And that's really one of the big steps taken forward over the last 10 years. When you ask Léa Seydoux which actress inspired her, she says Marlon Brando.
Me too.
An inspirer of men as well. The line gets blurry between the inspirations. But virility is everywhere. Feminine and masculine are everywhere, and they can be personified in female bodies as well as male bodies. Personally, as a director, it's certain that I have always, and you can probably hear it in my voice, in some way deliberately when I write my scenarios. For example, when I wrote Leah's character, I always started by, she arrives, beautiful and willing. L'attribution, l'assignation, en tous les cas, d'une féminité. And the word willing is one that really counts in attributing a femininity that means something to me. That means she doesn't use the absolute desire seduced, does not necessarily go through the pleasure of being looked at by a man, or of a man observing us like a flower. You can be showered with compliments when you're a young woman, a woman who can resemble a beautiful flower. And it's true that when you say she doesn't smile, it's also a way of saying, oh, to be serious. I mean, I remember when I started making films, and on top of that, I mean, you're a woman. Furthermore, I was in my 20s. At the end of my 20s, the issue of our gender was automatically brought up, which was very new for me because I had had an academic career where this type of issue never or hardly ever came up. Image got involved in it, and when images were needed for the press, I remember I was asked to pose, and I wasn't used to that. I wasn't used to posing. I think that Olivia Assayas, with whom Kristen Stewart filmed, wasn't used to it in the same way as I wasn't. Jacques Audiard. Yet they didn't ask us to pose in the same way. And I'll remember for the rest of my life that that one day we did a series of photo shoots. It was in the USA. It was during the Unifrance encounters in New York. They asked a number of female directors to pose together. I was happy on the one hand to be part of a cohesive new wave of female directors who could represent the simplicity or rather the joy of making films in France because we're valued for a whole set of economic reasons. But on the other hand, I realized that they were asking us to pose And one of my fellow directors, I can't remember whether it was Mia Hansen-Love or Axel Ropert, said, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. My job's serious. So I'm going to put on a serious expression. I'm sorry. Forgive me if I neither smile nor whimper on the photo with my partner for the day, but I'm going to be serious. Nowadays, I totally go along with that. That doesn't mean from time to time we don't have fun. There's a time for fun. There's a time for talking about joy and a time for joking. But the work we do, I mean, the work that Lear and Kristen do, can have the same foundation as Marlon Brando or Bob De Niro when he arrives for an interview, and that's power.
Yes, and being involved in the image industry without necessarily rejoicing in it.
In which way do you mean that?
For example, not liking having one's photo taken.
Do you like having your photograph taken?
I like encounters, and Karl Lagerfeld gave me something very precious. When he took my photograph, when I met him, I thought I was falling to the very depth of superficiality when I was getting into fashion. But I met that man who gave me a great deal.
Yeah, I remember at the time that you listened to Charles Aznavour and wore your hair. Short.
When I met Carl, my hair was still long.
Did he persuade you to cut it?
No, I cut it for a film.
I remember for La Vie Nouvelle de Philippe Grandier.
That's right. But I'd also cut it on my own initiative. Once I'd cut them for the sake of freedom. It's quite something to do to oneself. I shaved my head down to the scalp I could use public transport without being bothered.
Why? Because otherwise your beauty brought you too many compliments that would prevent you from...
My beauty and probably the sensual flow of my hair. The fact that I looked like a young female lead, it was too difficult. There was too much aggression, too many requests. I admit that the fact that I shaved my head really solved the problem.
I'm not so sure, because I've seen you with the short hair, and unfortunately for you, you were just as beautiful.
Yeah, but people liked it.
It's like Natalie Portman in V for Vendetta. People liked it.
Yes, well, some people like it, but not everybody. Speaking of archetypes, you have invented some strong female characters in your films. The female characters carry the film.
Well, sorry, but not really. I mean, in my first two films, I've only made three, but in my first two films, yes, the main character in my first film was Léa Seydoux, a young woman. But in the second, she was really part of a wild bunch of nuclear industry workers. But earlier today, I was having a long conversation with Martin Scorsese because as president of the SRF, the French Film Directors Society, we have given him a special award. It's a very important homage from French cinema. And people have told me that Scorsese's cinema is not feminist. Or as Jacques Audiard said, who was on stage with us, it's not a feminine cinema. But for me, a director who reinvents the masculine archetype is a feminist director in some way. When I make a film with nuclear workers and tell them you're going to do the washing up in your little caravan, it's a way of taking responsibility as a director.
Of course.
And saying, feminine is not what you think it is. Masculine is not what you think it is. That goes for both of them, mainly men.
Well,
and the characters who I like the most are men.
Can't have one without the other.
No. Yeah, but I mean, it's still difficult to understand because from time to time we see video mashup edits from films directed by women where only women's faces are shown. As a female filmmaker, I want to have as much political responsibility as possible in how I film women as I do filming men. It's the same for the directors I admire.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the work of Alain Giraudy is a director who has made L'Inconnu du Lac, Resté Vertical, and he's someone who, in another register, not only plays on the masculine-feminine side, but also the fluidity of gender, sexuality, queer, homosexuality, and has succeeded in imposing new role models.
In any cases, the creators, yes, he has a way of reinventing the police officer.
Yeah, I really like that character.
Ultimately, actually extremely realistic, because we live with movies, and movies sometimes create archetypes, such as the virile police officer that Jane Campion captures magnificently in Top of the Lake. I'm even more impressed by how she invented the man who does not exist in all his virility in her thriller
In the Cut, which is quite extraordinary.
And Mark Ruffalo was ideal for the role, absolute genius. But I didn't come here to ask you about the disassociation of masculine and feminine, just the way you can make your mark. I would never criticize directors or novelists who write from their position as human beings. They may identify with male characters, although this does not apply to all of them, and have leading characters onto whom they project. Some project themselves onto female characters. There are some amazing things being done in literature.
Yeah, you should have heard her. There was Kate Tempest, an artist I find really great, an English rapper who also writes and has been an author for 5 or 6 years. She said that she'd initially written her most recent novel thinking of a male character, and then quickly, she realised why. I mean, why should this man who has so much swagger and has had so many love stories not be a lesbian woman? It was really fascinating.
Likewise, in Alien, the character of Sigourney was initially a man.
Getting back to where we are right now, surrounded by pictures of models wearing spectacular garments, I believe that there are some invisible links between the professions of directors and couturiers that involve creating clothes that will make characters dream and fantasize, which are the characters of our future. So is that what you meant by modernity in your question?
Yes, that's what I mean. That fashion takes to the streets and creates reality.
It shakes up the morphology of towns and people. I remember for the rest of my life that when I lived in Lyon, where I went for my studies, I'll boast that I attended Normal Sup at Lyon. I think the canned champagne has encouraged me to boast,
but you're not boasting.
It's time to tell you a story, a little less glamorous. It was at a time when the labels of the major brands that democratized fashion had yet to arrive in the provincial cities of France, and the city's morphology was different. To such an extent that I realized how much power, and it was really, really nice time in fashion because figures looked good. Very tight-fitting trousers with ballerina pumps. You know, we were going back to the 60s. And as a filmmaker, I'm very sensitive to the issue of costume. And I saw that the city didn't have the same face and that the women weren't... So, I mean, they couldn't express themselves, their personalities in the same way, couldn't have so much fun with the variations in clothing because of the difficulty of finding different clothes, different outfits. And when the major retail outlets set up everywhere, well, obviously they copied everything everywhere. Anyway, I don't want to get into an economic debate, but they made it possible to pass on the couturiers' thoughts, their psyches, and give access to the women who couldn't afford them. That changed quite a few things about the morphology of towns and people.
Yes, you see, as a director, for example, if you decide to make a film set in the summer of 2014, when the trend is coral as a colour, well, you can't find anything else than coral. Would you go ahead and do your film?
Hang on, wait a minute. Anna Muglelis. I mean, when you're obsessive, like I am, costume is a question of semantics. Namely, what is the symbol associated with the character? So it really is work in terms of writing with the head costume makers with whom I have the privilege and pleasure to work with, including Anaïs Romand, with whom I made Planetarium, who's a tremendous head costume maker, who also made Yves Saint Laurent with Bonello. They're people who come from theatre, places where the scale of the resources is smaller than the ideas, and who analyse, think about the costume in the sense of the character and the script, how it develops. I find that work fascinating. And I'm also close to José Lévy, who made all the costumes for all the plays by Arthur Noziciel over the past few years. And the relationship between costume and theatre puts us in pure semiology.
Warm colours, cold colours.
They had to be found. We can invent them. I've always been fascinated by uniforms. That's my thing. I remember in my first two films, I specified a uniform with the head costume maker for each character. And I wanted each uniform to remain unchanged. The uniform could have a few slight variations in detail, such as in my second film, Grand Central. It was very short, denim shorts with a transparent bodysuit that revealed her erect nipples, which earned me some criticism from feminists, which is silly, because I'm really on the same side as they are. At the same time, I acknowledged it.
You know that today in Argentina, one young woman was sent home from school because she wasn't wearing a bra.
Yes, I find that quite legitimate. Oh no, I find that atrocious. Why?
Because she was sent home from a state school with a note for her parents saying she had to put on her bra. There was a throwing of bras afterwards.
At the core, it raises the question of the threat of a woman's body and... It's quite tragic. You do not tell a woman how she should dress. Never. Neither short nor long, covered, uncovered. And I think that is a mantra that can take us across modern times with composure. Basically, a woman can dress the way she wants to.
On the subject of outfits, there are many directors out there who seem oblivious to the fact that they're filming in colour. It's as if everything was done in black and white. For example, you see colour combination that... your eyes. Cinema is about images and specifically moving images. So it's better if everything is thought out.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's total responsibility. In truth, we're given so much money for a film. Excuse me.
You don't get it personally.
I don't give it personally, but the budgets are very big. I mean, we have to have an absolute responsibility for what we do. It's as Bazin said, the cinema isn't a window that we open onto the world, but a mask that hides the rest. Insofar as we imagine, the cinema is not something that helps us see, but something that masks the rest from us. We have an enormous responsibility of what we put in the frame.
Rebecca, having watched your films and the actresses you have promoted, who have become magnificent characters in films, I would like to thank you for the femininity.
Thank you, Anna.
And indeed, masculinity that you create.
They go together.
And the transgression.
Thank you, Anna. See you soon.